The last week we have given a definition of a PID control that was based on the sum of the three separated terms, the proportional one, the integral one, the derivative one, divided by a quantity equal to 1 plus STF, whose role was to limit, in particular, the derivative contribution at high frequencies. That formula clearly shows the presence of two poles, one due indeed to the limitation term and one due to the pole into the origin, and the two zeros that are due to the solutions of the second order equation in S that can be written at the numerator in the formula. Clearly, these two solutions, these two zeros, are typically used to compensate the poles of the process. The classic approach in the usage of all these techniques is to consider the poles of the particular transfer function in the application we are considering, and to set the poles of the control function so as to make them to be the same values, make them, I mean, the poles of the process and the zeros of the control function, introducing poles through the control functions that are so high in frequency that in practice don't affect in any mode the overall function of the acquisition chain. However, with such a kind of definition in the transfer function of the control, this approach is not very simple, is not very immediate. What would be very useful is shown in slide 14, where we have a new definition of the PID control expressed by the formula V equal to K prime E multiplying 1 plus S T prime E time 1 plus S T prime D divided by S T prime E that multiplies 1 plus S T F. We remember that E is the input to the control function, that is the error between the process variable and the set point, and TI prime, TID are the two constants that express the weight of the integral contribution and the derivative contribution in the overall control function, and the TF is the limiting pole at high frequencies. What is the merit of such a kind of function? That the two zeros are separately expressed, clear to be set, and corresponding exactly to the contribution of the integral term and derivative term. So, by tuning the two components of the PID function, we can also set the zeros that allow us, that help us to compensate the poles of the process. But the question is, This is a formula that we wrote for our convenience, but is not a formal, let's say, mathematical expression obtained like the one we have defined and on which we made a lot of considerations last week. Can we say that they are equivalent or not? Because if they are equivalent, clearly we will prefer this last one, because it is directly related to the poles of the process. In other words, we can interact with the poles of the process because we can set the two zeros of the PID function exactly equal to them. For this reason, this expression is called interactive PID, while the expression we defined last week was is called non-interactive PID. But I repeat, the question is, the two functions are equivalent? If we develop this last one, we arrive to the long expression in the middle of slide 14, where the control variable that represents the output of the controller is equal to E divided by 1 plus STF, that multiplies the development of all the terms that we have written just now, that is k prime divided by STI prime plus k prime plus k prime that multiplies t prime d divided by t prime e plus k prime ST prime d. And if we collect as a common factor the expression 1 plus t prime d divided t prime I, the new expression is e k prime divided by 1 plus STF multiplied by 1 plus t prime d divided by t prime I that we highlighted in the previous expression, that multiplies a new quantity contained into within brackets and made by 1 divided by st prime I that multiplies 1 plus t prime d divided by t prime e plus s t prime d divided 1 divided by 1 by plus t prime d divided in turn by t prime e plus 1. This expression contained within squared brackets can be further simplified by defining the term we have highlighted, 1 plus t prime d divided by t prime I, as q. In that case, the expression can be, let's say, simplified, writing it as e k prime times q divided by 1 plus STF, that multiplies the expression in squared brackets made by 1 divided by st prime iq plus st prime d divided by q plus 1. It is very easy, very elegant, and very clear to understand. Is this expression, or can this expression be considered equivalent to the last week one? Yes. If q is equal to 1, the two formulas, the two expressions are perfectly equivalent. are the same. And if not, they are very similar if Q tends to 1. But this happens if the expression, the term T prime D divided by T prime I becomes 0. Or, in other words, T prime I is much bigger than T prime D. But is this correct or not? T prime D much lower than T prime I? Clearly, yes. Clearly, this is very reasonable because T prime I represents the constant that is the weight of the integral term, while the derivative term is weighted by T prime D. On the basis of all the considerations that we have done the last week, we have understood that the integral term is an accumulator, and that its own contribution tends to become bigger if the error, if the distance between process variable and set point continues to be present for a long time interval. In this case, the amount of the integral term becomes very consistent. So we expect that the integral T prime I term must be not trivial, not low, because it has to compensate this effect. We said that if the integral term becomes too much big, the effect could bring the process variable far from the set point, not close to it. So Ti will be not negligible. Conversely, Td is a constant that weights the derivative contribution. And since the derivative contribution is introduced just to reduce, to smooth, we could say, the response of the system to a very big and rapid variation of the error, the derivative contribution could be quite large, and again, to avoid a divergence in the control variable, we must multiply it by a constant that tends to keep the overall term not very high, not so big. In other words, it tends to reduce it. So, once more, we can say that typically Td will be small and Ti will be a little bit larger. And this is exactly what we need, considering the new expression of the interactive PID, because Td and small and Ti large, following the new notation, T prime D small and T prime I large, means Q very close to 0. Sorry, very close to 1. Therefore, the possibility of using such a kind of expression called interactive for the compensation of the poles. Okay, we have said that it is reasonable to suppose that T prime D is not big and T prime I is not small, but this is not always like this, because this depends on the poles of the process. Consider that t prime I and t prime d will be in this expression the two zeros that we want to compensate the poles of the process. So if the process features poles that are very, let's say, separated in frequency, one more or less located at low medium frequencies and the other located more or less at high frequencies, okay, the condition for having a t prime I producing a zero that is located at low medium frequencies and t prime d producing a zero that is located at high frequencies are present, and we can serenely use that expression. Otherwise, if the two poles of the process are not so separated, are not so far one from the other, that formula is hard to be used. The PID is very powerful, provides the possibility, we have said, for compensating the poles of a process, provides a gain that is not limited when S is equal to zero, that is at regimen, and a limited gain at high frequencies. So it is characterized by many interesting and useful properties in the control of a process. In the course of automatic controls, you surely will have analyzed the main benefits, but also the main drawbacks of the PID. So it is not the case to repeat here what you have already learned. But I want to highlight just one drawback, one limitation featured by such a kind of, in any case, powerful control technique, that is related to those processes into which we have a number of poles that could be very high. In this situation, the PID could be, let's say, in trouble, because PID provides two zeros to compensate the poles, but if a process is characterized by five or six poles, okay, we can, let's say, make a couple of them to be out of the game, but the other three or four are still present and will compromise the stability of the overall acquisition chain. It's time to abandon the classic techniques, the proportional integral, the proportional integral derivative controls, and to begin to learn those specific techniques that can be applied to particular conditions that can affect the industrial processes that we want to control. And the first one is a situation that is well represented by the general example to which we have always made reference in these lessons, that is the heat exchanger. The heat exchanger is a process that features several poles. I briefly remember the situation that is characterized by a room, a chamber, into which the heat is provided to a suitable fluid that enters into a serpentine and exits from it after having having been warmed by a vapor, a hot vapor that is introduced into the chamber through a tube that is regulated by a valve. The ring that we are considering is, let's measure the input temperature of the fluid together with also its own flux. Let's measure the temperature in output and let's compare it to a suitable set point that we want to reach. The error will be provided to a controller unit, and this controller unit will regulate the opening or closing window, let's say, of the valve through a suitable actuator. The actuator is given by a motor, for example a direct current motor, but probably even a stepper motor in this case could be suitable for such a kind of process if the valve is not too hard to be moved, to be managed. And this motor will regulate the input vapor flow by moving a gate, let's say, that is made by a sliding door. When this slider moves from left to right, we have a slit through which the vapor will pass. Of course, when the slider will move in the opposite direction, the amount of the vapor that can pass through it will be reduced up to be completely stopped when the slider is completely closed, when the valve is completely closed. We can say that the flow of the vapor is proportional to the width of the slit itself. This situation is shown in the picture in the lower part of the slide 15. M is the motor that we are considering. That rectangular figure with an internal window in part, let's say, gray and in part white, represents the slider, the gate. X is the distance, the amount of which regulates the open part of the window itself through which the vapor can pass. Clearly, we can say that there is a relationship between the distance x we make the slider to do and the motor rotation. The intuition, in fact, suggests to us that we can transform the rotational movement of the motor into a linear movement like the one made by the slider through the presence of a gear rack, a screw, as we have already said when we talked about the transducer. Therefore, we have a proportional relationship between the velocity with which the motor rotates and the velocity with which the slider closes or opens the window that allows the vapor to pass. but the distance x that we are interested to highlight will be the integral of such a kind of linear velocity. And since we have that this distance is proportional to the flux of the vapor, we can conclude that the flux of the vapor is proportional to the integral of the linear velocity, that is, the integral of the rotation velocity of the motor itself. And an integral in the frequency domain corresponds to the presence of a pole into the origin. Let's remember, moreover, that the relationship between the control variable that the controller can exert, can provide to the motor itself, and the mechanical parameter that in such a way the controller can modify, that is the velocity of the motor, is, if you remember, a low pass filter, k divided by 1 plus s tau, where tau is the constant of the motor itself. So only this part of the overall system features the presence of two poles, one due to the motor and one due to the gate, to the screw, we could say. In other words, we are in a situation into which there is a strict relationship between those parts that characterize the overall actuating mechanism. In this case, the actuator is made by the motor and the screw and the valve. Okay? Only this part is characterized by two poles. We have not seen the characteristics of the thermal process we are controlling, but we can say in advance that the process will feature another pole due to the, let's say, characteristic it has of being an energy accumulator. Moreover, we can see the presence of one or two delay elements in such a kind of control chain. So the situation is not easy to be managed, because we have at least three poles plus two delay components, and clearly the situation in terms of stability is not pink, we could say, is not so easy to control. In such a case, in this type of situations, however, we can apply the ancient proverb that says divide et impera. It is a good idea to be applied in many problems, in engineering I mean. That is, let's take into account the problems separately. That is, let's consider a first problem, then a second, and then another one. In this specific process, this means that we can take care of the poles given by the overall actuator mechanism in a separate way from those that affect the process and from the delays components. This is the principle on which the so-called cascade control is based. In this specific situation, we will concentrate our attention on the mechanism that includes motor, screw, and valve. Let's go to slide 16 into which that we have a little bit modified the situation by introducing one transducer more, and by making the hypothesis, a strong hypothesis, to have more knowledge about the process. But let's see. First of all, we see in the picture that we have, as before, a comparison between the temperature of the fluid that enters into the serpentine with the set point we want it has. This information, perhaps the distance between the two terms, will be provided to a controller that is called CT. This means a temperature controller that in turn will provide a new set point to the system related to the right position the slider must have in the actuator mechanism to have the or to bring the process at the temperature we want it has. In other words, we are supposing to have a further element of knowledge, that is, we are supposing to know what is the relationship between the desired temperature and the position of the slider in the actuator. This is not an absurd hypothesis, because it is possible that by making a lot of tests and calibrating in the right way the valve, we can arrive to know these things. But clearly, it's a strong hypothesis, and in any case, it corresponds to add one more thing to the control problem, to the control approach we are using. If such a hypothesis can be made, you see that the SP prime new set point will be compared with the measurement PV, process variable, of a new quantity that is introduced into the process through a transducer, through a position transducer that will measure the position of the slider into the valve. In other words, we are making the acquisition of the X variable we have defined before, that expresses the position of the part of the window in the valve that is open, and of course of the part of the window that is closed. The difference between the new set point S prime and the new variable measured is given to another controller, CP, position controller, that will regulate the velocity of the motor so as the X value, the position of the window in the slider, will be the ideal one to assure the desired temperature. So now we have seen that the approach is interesting, but it introduces, let's say, a redundancy level in the overall control, because we add the knowledge of the relationship between position of the window in the valve and the desired temperature. We add a new transducer. We add the acquisition of a new variable, the position of the window in the valve, and we add a new controller. Of course, the entity that will be charged with the controlling phases the controller in temperature and the controller in position will be always the same, a microprocessor. But now we have introduced a function, a new function that must be elaborated by the micro itself. So such a kind of cascade control features the introduction of more elements in the overall control that we apply to the processor. But if this is possible, the new chain and the new acquisition and control philosophies are deeply modified and allow us to achieve a very better and more affordable control of the system. The situation is presented in slide 17 that shows how we pass from a certain control approach to another one, into which there is a control chain embedded into another control chain, another ring external to it. Let's give a look to the upper part of the slide, and we see the classic approach to our specific situation. So the error information between the set point and the temperature provided by the transducer plus its conditioning network is given to the controller. The controller will react with a control variable V that will be provided to the motor. The motor will give us an angular velocity omega. The integration of such a kind of velocity will be angular rotation that is directly related to the x distance by which the window internal to the actuator, internal to the valve, that is the slider, is moving, and that distance x will turn out into a flux of the vapor that will affect the new temperature of the process itself. Very excellent, very easy to understand. The solution that we are considering transforms this ring in another one that is shown in the lower part of the slide, into which we see that the two controllers we have made the hypothesis to have are explicitly shown, controller 1 and controller 2. They receive two measured variables. The first is again the temperature, and it is given to the controller 1. But this controller provides a new set point as P prime, a set point in position that is compared with the variable provided by the linear position transducer plus its own conditioning network that measures how open or how closed is the valve. And this information is given to the controller number 2 that will manage the motor, so determining the angular velocity omega that will provide a new distance x that will be measured by the new transducer. The valve and the process remain, but they will belong to the external ring. They will remain under the management of the controller 1. Instead, the controller 2 will take care of make the internal ring stable. And what is the philosophy? What is the issue? If we focus our attention on the internal ring, we can say that we have two poles. The first is the pole due to the motor, so a low-pass filter pole, and the second is due to the integration that relates the angular velocity to the x distance, 1 divided by s. So we have two poles. The Bode diagram will provide a curve that crosses the 0 dB axis with a slope that could be minus 40 dB per decade, and this, let's say, compromises the possible stability of the overall process, sure, but in particular of the internal ring in such a kind of control chain. We know, however, that the situation can be improved, first of all, by compensating the pole of the motor, that is, by introducing a suitable zero in the control function of the controller number 2, where this zero that is introduced is exactly equal to the time constant of the motor, so it will basically cancel its effect. Moreover, the function of the controller 2 will be characterized by a suitable pole, because you remember, when we compensate a function, we must introduce the same number of zero as the same number of poles. But the pole of the controller 2 function will be located, and we can do it, at very high frequencies, so as basically we can exclude it from the range of the frequencies at which this actuator works. In other words, we can say that basically this pole due to the motor disappears. So from a situation into which we have two poles, we arrive to a situation into which, in practice, we have one pole and no more. But we can do something better, we can improve the situation, let's say, but it is necessary that the process that we are considering, in particular the actuator we are considering, is characterized by a specific property. That is, the other pole of such a kind of internal ring is located, let's say, theoretically, at s equal to zero. That is, when the transient has expired and the frequency of the phenomenon that we are considering can be considered, can be set to zero. Can be considered null. Is this possible in a process like this? That is, the position x of the valve can be considered definitively stopped, frozen, or not? Clearly, the answer depends on the process. In this case, we could say, okay, yes, the valve position will be that one at which we regulate the actuator, we regulate the screw. In other processes, this variable that is under control in the internal chain is not completely frozen, is not completely, let's say, blocked. And this allows to us to say that the process at a frequency s equal to zero will never work, will never arrive. And this is very important, because at that point we can extend the function of the controller number 2, that is, we can enrich it with another couple of zero pole elements. We have a first function zero pole to compensate the motor pole, and we introduce another couple where the zero will be located at a very low frequency, very very low, close to zero, but of course not at zero, it is not possible, and the pole as before will be located at a very high frequency. This is a very important and interesting solution, because if you introduce this new function, you will have that from the frequency low but a little bit higher than zero up to the poles of the controller number 2, the transfer function of the internal ring is constant. And this is important, very important for us, because we said that the process, the actuator, will never reach S equal to zero. And we can always set the two poles of the controller number 2 function at so high frequencies that in practice are out of the range of the actuator, of the valve itself. In other words, in this specific case, we could say that the transfer function of the internal ring has been transformed into a constant flat curve. And the power of the approach, the power of the algorithm is evident. With the first compensation and with the second hypothesis, basically we have eliminated in the practical range of frequencies into which the actuator works both the poles that affect the overall ring. So we have made a very good work. But for doing this, we were obliged, first of all, to introduce a new controller. Second, to introduce a new transducer. And this means to manage the acquisition, sampling and hold, conversion, so a new task for the microprocessor. Third, to make the hypothesis that we know the relationship between position and temperature. And fourth, to have a specific process that will never reach, the piece, will never stop, that is, will never work at S equal to zero, so we can compensate even that situation. But if all these conditions are respected, and if all the hypotheses are real and not theoretical, the cascade control offers us a very powerful approach to eliminate possible sources of instability in the overall control, and therefore in the overall process we are managing.